life creates civilization, and when you're not nurturing life, you've destroyed civilization. All right? So you may be living together, but you're not living civilized. All right? And I would say that this is what we see in the world around us. We see it epitomized recently in, and I say recently, but just it exacerbatedly recently, just in the way that so flagrant the trans type of thing, the homosexuality, the endorsement of it, birth control, the abortion, just the whole gamut of this is the culmination of a rejection of God, a failure to live within the under His law, and therefore civilization begins to decline as we refuse His law.
You become less civilized, what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, yeah. It's not really, it's not reality. It's not. Within reality, those systems don't work. The only reason they're working temporarily is because of borrowed capital from previous generations who have lived
more within, consistent.
Lived highly civilized lives. So, you know, I think of civilization versus barbarians.
And what we see in the barbarian worldview is death, the culture of death. We have
a situation where they're not living according to the law of God, not respecting personal property, not respecting life, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Except, I mean, you know, not others' life, their own, but.
Where I was going with that is as we find more and more of these ungodly civilizations, we find mounds of bones, death. Sadly, we look at our culture, we find mounds of bodies also.
Well, I think in that, there's for a civilization to thrive and continue, it requires upkeep. I think of Rome. Rome fell. The civilization of Rome fell because of the depravity that they entered it after they became powerful.
So you mentioned upkeep, and I don't know if you are going somewhere particular with that, okay? But it flows well in the vein here, okay? Because what happens in a civilization, if you take Adam and Eve, you put them in the garden, in order for life to, and I want to say get better. And I know that this is kind of against the way that we generally view the Garden of Eden. It was good, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it was comfortable, easy. When you just have two people, there's a lot of work to be done. The more people that you have, the more advanced that you can and more focused that you can get in your industry. And the richness of the individual, the creativity of individuals can be explored and can be a benefit to everyone else. We have electricity today because someone had enough time to go and figure out more about God's wonderful world. Okay? But if we were stuck trying to eke out food for today, enough energy, enough warmth for today, then we would not be able to explore. But in community, in working together, we have a synergy. We have a productive, an additional productive benefit to each other's efforts so that we become more productive and give additional time to explore how to be more of a blessing to everyone else, ourselves included. There is personal interest in this, okay? But as this, so what allows us to actually live together? Let me do this. I didn't do this last time, but let me show you this. Let's see. All right. So, this is, where'd he go? There you go. Years since the flood. 4,358 years since the flood. These are the assumptions that this growth pattern is based on. 20 years per generation, 60-year lifespan. There's a perfect male-to-female ratio, and everyone gets married, and every couple has three children. Okay?
None of them die in childbirth.
None of them die in childbirth.
They all live a full, long life.
60 years. Okay? 60. At 80 years after the flood, there would have been 42 people. Total population, 42. All right? 200 years, we've got 474. 500 years, we have 207,621. All right? But it gets crazy from here, because as you move forward, 1,000 years in, you've got 5 billion people. Sound similar? Familiar? In just 20 more years, you have 11 billion people. If you go up to 3,000 or 4,300, oh, by the way, if you saw that, one pause, we pause. I gotta quit holding that down. What I did was, we get to 1,000, and I said 1,000. I did that right. Yes, I'm tracking the right side. I did the BC and AD on the other side here, and I confused myself. But bringing it all the way up to time of Christ, there would have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 21, 3 to the 21th power. 3 times 10 to the 21st power. People in the world.
Is that quadrillion or something?
Have no idea what that number is.
A bunch.
Yeah. Okay? If you follow that out to today, there would be 2 times 10, I think it's to the 39th. 2 times 10 to the 39th power.
You had that in here somewhere.
I did, in the previous one, not in the...
Oh, okay.
Okay? What this is, if this is these assumptions say that we're able to live together. Okay? But what happened is there's only 9 billion people on this earth today. Why is that? Well, I didn't account for disease. Okay, mm-hmm. And disease is massive. But do you know what's more massive than disease?
Murder.
We kill each other. We don't live together in peace. And what God's law is, how to live together in peace. Ben mentioned that, where we respect people's property rights. Property rights are freedom. Without property rights, you have no freedom. Okay? Because you can own things, you have freedom. If you can't own things, you don't have freedom. And God says, each person is given stuff by me, and you, other person, should respect what I have given to this first person, and vice versa.
It's kind of like the fruits in the four soils. It's not always is equal.
It's not. It's what God has given, and you say, yes, sir. Okay? And be productive. Work. With your hands, do that which is good. Labor with all your might for the glory of God. And these things under God's law create people. That is the product of God's law. And do you know what people represent? People represent wealth. When you kill people, you're killing wealth. You're killing everybody's wealth. Because together, the more people there are, the better the world is. God made it so. He said, be fruitful and multiply. This is good. Okay? It was so necessary that he created a woman for Adam. Okay? Yes, sir.
It's just interesting seeing those numbers. And could it give us any sort of insight of the limitations of
there is no limit.
The future?
There is no limit.
It appears that God would not intend, either not intend for things to just go on forever, or he would put us in a space travel or something like that.
And even if not, we have a limited imagination.
So I'm saying it's evidence of some wrap up.
I don't think so. I do not believe that it indicates a wrap up. I think that it is a failure on our part to understand that people are what is the whole thing is about. That the more people there are, the more inventions there's going to be, the more capacity there will be. God created the earth to allow man to flourish. And the reason we don't flourish is because we reject his law. Could be, I'll give you this, that could be that we get to a certain point and God says, great, you have fulfilled the mandate.
But he gives us we don't no have anything that says that. No, there's no indication of that.
And what happens is, the ungodly, do you know what they say about population growth? Fear! Fear! Be afraid! The world is coming to an end. The sky is falling.
And that's playing God is what that is.
It's a rejection of what God has told us to do. In faith, have children. Fill the earth. Now, you can't do it in a reckless abandon, but that's what we started with. Let me go back over and show you.
The earth isn't anywhere close to being filled.
Okay. He determined that these two, man and woman, in cooperative union, together under his law. All of this is a part of this. You cannot reject one of these parts and expect this to work. Okay? It all works.
Irreducibly complex.
Appreciate that statement. Irreducibly complex. All right?
I guess what I'm saying is, though, the earth would be full if you get that scenario.
God tells us when it's full.
Maybe.
He said, fill it.
Well, I mean, apart from some kind of miracle.
Well, you hadn't even factored in. You jumped right to going to space. We got oceans that we could inhabit somehow with proper technologies.
We do skyscrapers.
They go up and can go down.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the possibilities, even just using some imagination. And I'm not saying mine's great, but just a little bit of imagination. There's a lot of possibilities to actually fill this earth that God has given to us. I don't know what it would look like. We're not close to that, okay? But the command was, fill the earth, be fruitful, and multiply. Fill the earth.
Yeah, but the idea, and I'm not saying this is your idea, but the idea that it can't be done, that's playing God. That's deciding. That's being short-sighted and not giving God enough power. God can do whatever.
What we find?
We have very short-sighted to say something like that.
In our recent history, because I think that we have a very distorted historical view. But in recent history, whenever wood began to be scarce as far as an energy source, we found other energy sources. First, we found coal. Then we found gasoline and oil. We found nuclear. You know why we don't use nuclear?
Fear.
Yes. Oh, yep. But we have found good ways of using nuclear, safer ways, but we reject that.
Oh, and greed. And greed, because the people who own the other resources don't want nuclear to be used, because then their resources will be less valuable.
And so we're back to personal property.
And greed.
You don't have the right to produce something for yourself. You can't. We refuse to let you.
Well, you're back to lack of freedom.
Lack of freedom, yes. Okay? So, within God's law, we flourish. Outside of God's law, we destroy ourselves. We reduce our capacity. All right? So, number of things here that I wanted to talk through to kind of line out more about. Thank you. Line out more about this. But man consists of two sexes, and by mankind consists of two sexes, male and female. Mankind, male and female, is made in the image of God. We are image bearers. Mankind, these image bearers, have been commissioned by their Creator to fill the earth with these images of God, similar to the way God did. This is the creation mandate. Now, just because I do believe that this is really important in the sense of noting it, like drawing this out, but those that reject God, what do they say is the curse on the earth?
Man.
What should fill the earth?
Nature.
Nature. They say nature. I'm talking about what do they say? They say nature. That animals are the proper inhabitants of this earth. And that man is spoiling it. But if you go back to Genesis chapter 1, when God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply, who did he tell to be fruitful and multiply?
Us and the seed, the humans and the
Man and animals.
He did not bless the animals to fill the earth. He blessed mankind to fill the earth. He blessed those that were in the sea to fill the earth, to fill the sea. And he said, let there be birds in the heavens. Okay? Which I think gives us an indication of where man should be and what shouldn't be. I am not saying to destroy plants and animals. The point is that they are ours for our food, for us to flourish. Okay? This is not a reckless abandon. Just like you plant a garden and you are very intentional about protecting that garden so that it will grow well, but you're not doing it so that it will cover everything. Why do you plant the garden?
To provide.
For yourself. Okay? Rush Limbaugh, God rest his soul. He said, if you want something to be preserved, sell it. Make a market for it. Do you want buffalo to flourish? You want buffalo to survive and not become extinct? Sell buffalo steak. And he's right. The way to preserve something is to turn it into a market. And it won't go extinct. If you can make a market for it, someone will preserve it and sell it.
And enhance it, usually.
And enhance it. Yes. Okay? By refusing to acknowledge God's commands, we distort what this world is. All right? So we come back to living together under God's law. The point there that I wanted to draw out is that God made man in his image, and he said, fill the earth with his image. People who do not love God's image don't love God. And the flip side of that is those people that do not love God do not love his image. I'll give you a scripture reference. You ready? Called 1 John. Okay? How can a man say he loves God when he does not love his brother? The two go together. You love your brother, you love God. You love God, you love your brother. The two are not separate from each other. All right, so filling the earth with these images of God is the creation mandate. By affirming and embracing the distinct, specific, and unique role of male and female as God has created you, this is how you do this creation mandate, by affirming and embracing the distinct, specific, and unique role of male and female. The unique role of male and female. Thank you. That brought me back. Okay, so you mentioned, what was it that he mentioned that I said was good? It was the ease of life. Okay, and I forgot.
The upkeep of culture, how it takes.
Upkeep, that's right. Thank you. Okay, so what takes place is that as we produce a civilization, as we embrace God's law, life gets easier. As it gets easier, the distinction between the sexes it is not as obvious how necessary those distinctions are. You were going to say?
That was Nate's testimony today, too. As you accept God's law, it gets easier.
Yeah, as you accept it. Yeah, but the upkeep here that I'm speaking of is that because technology, and I use that as a very broad term here, okay, but the advancement of civilization makes it not as obvious the distinction between the sexes. So, an illustration would be that a man and a woman can both, nowadays, provide the income for the family. I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying it's easy to because of the technological advancements. But do you know what would happen if the technology all went away? The woman would find herself woefully inadequate to provide the energy and the food to keep people fed and warm. Basic necessities. If you strip away civilization and you take us back to the extreme basics, the division between the sexes becomes incredibly obvious. Just is. And I don't mind speaking deeper into that, but anybody have any questions about that, or you want to say something about that? My point here is that the upkeep then is to continue to identify and to delineate, to draw a very, very clean and ordered line between the sexes. And when you do not do this cultural upkeep, then you begin to deteriorate the society because the sexes, the role of the sexes, begin to blend. Because there's no, it's not as physically delineated by just the sheer harshness of the world, of the environment.
Well, yeah, and quite frankly, the part of the result of weekly worship is upkeep of civilization.
Agreed. Yeah.
Because even as the necessity of the, I still think the necessity is there for the differentiation of the different roles men and women play. Because whether a woman could,
I don't remember saying it.
I didn't say you didn't. I didn't say you did. I'm just pointing out. I'm just saying the point. I didn't say you said it was unnecessary. I'm just saying that it's still necessary. Whether it's as obvious to see or not, or it's still necessary. And what will happen is that it would look like it's not necessary, so then people start acting like it's not necessary, but then the result will be destruction of the civilization because they gave up on what was necessary.
Okay,
so weekly worship...
Is that what you're talking about? When technology increases, ease of life, is that what you're saying?
Well, you said that with current technologies, it's possible for like your example was, it's possible for a woman to provide for a family,
mm-hmm,
with current technologies in place. And current, it's more than technologies too. It's division of labor, mm-hmm, current structures.
And I use technology as a very, very, just to kind
so
of...
So you would include in that division of labors, yeah, and, mm-hmm, and all that. So my point is that, so while it seems possible, it's still going to be destructive to the civilization in the long term.
Absolutely.
So the point is, I didn't say you weren't saying that. I'm just like saying it out loud.
Uh-huh.
You were saying it, but you didn't actually say it. You weren't not saying it, but you didn't actually like verbalize it. So I'm just verbalizing.
Yeah.
So my point is that I was just contemplating that, well, in light of it not being as obvious, like, obviously necessary. Like when you go back to prayer life, it's obviously necessary. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like that it's obviously necessary that the strength necessary to plow the garden or break the land, till the land, tame the land or whatever was, you know, that the strength was not going to be there in full enough measure. So that's what you were kind of saying. You were alluding to that. Take away the technology.
Because that was the upkeep that I was speaking of. The very reason for upkeep is to continue to have this delineation between us.
Right, and my point is part of upkeep, I would say part of upkeep is for a civilization is going to have a religion. All civilizations have a religion.
Yes.
And so civilization will maintain itself as long as that religion has components of truth in it. Not every religion. Only a religion with all truth is a Christian religion. I'm going somewhere. So like even let's just take Islam. It's not true, but it has components of truth in it because it borrows from the truth, borrows from Christianity. So it has things in it that are kind of true. But if you look at their civilizations, they don't flourish very well. They can maintain them because of the little bits of truth that they have co-opted from Christianity. That's my position. But those little bits of truth have to be maintained within the civilization. Now, in a Christian civilization, Western civilization, the reason why it flourished is because of the Christian base they had. And the more Christian it was, the more it flourished. And what But what was required was that you maintain your basic fundamental Christian foundation. Well, as that is eroded, our civilization is eroding. But what keeps it from eroding is strong worship, strong, and that's what we do each Sunday. One of the things we do is we reiterate the faith. So that as you go out there and those distinctions are less evident, it doesn't matter if you can't see them as well. You simply believe that they're there and you act like they're there, even though you say, well, I don't really see that this is necessary anymore. Does that make sense where I'm going with this?
Yeah, so the upkeep, what you are specifically saying, is, as I'm hearing you, is that the upkeep is worship. Worship is the upkeep.
Worship in the sense of like
religious gathering, instructing in the Word of God particularly, is the upkeep that will continue to clean societies, clean the culture, clean civilization so that it can continue to become more civilized and progress.
What I'm saying is if you don't do that, you only have your own wisdom to go by. And then you look out there and you say, well, this isn't necessary anymore. Everything's working. Yeah. And you give up on the truth. You stop applying the truth. Now, you may apply the truth in a nuanced, different way than you applied the truth 300 years ago. Mm-hmm. It may look a little different, but it's still the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I'm saying the upkeep of a civilization is the maintenance of the truth. People believe in the truth within that civilization. And if you believe it, you act on it. If you believe it, it influences your decision, your policy making, in a broad sense. Even within no matter what the government is, whether it's the civil government or the family government, your policy making is based on what you believe. You make decisions based, the policy is just a decision. You make a decision based on what you believe. And so you get away from the truth, the civilization collapses. And one of the fundamental truths is the distinction between men and women. So that brings us back to where we are. But when I said a civilization has to have upkeep, that's what I meant. It has to continue to believe the truth and continue to apply the truth inside its civilization. Otherwise, eventually, it crumbles. I don't know if that's helpful or
no. I think it's very helpful and very relevant because the point that I was headed towards is that you have to have this upkeep, and that there is this natural atrophy. There is this because of sin. There is this atrophy, and maybe not even because of sin. Maybe there is a God created from the beginning. An atrophy that takes place, that what is good for us is to have to work against that. And the way that we work against that is in subjection to Him, submission to His laws, that we make this world even better and better than what He made it. He put together a garden. He planted a garden. So He fought against the entropy. And then He put man in there and said, continue to fight against the entropy. Make more of you to fight against the entropy and spread my creation around the world. Okay? Fill the earth.
Specifically, spread this garden.
Yes, the garden. This garden. I have shown you what an ordered world looks like. Continue to do this. Make everything around productive. Make it in an environment that is good for nurturing life, to sustain life. So, we complete, mankind completes works towards this creation mandate by affirming and embracing the distinct, specific, and the unique role of male and female as God has created you. If we do not embrace what God has created us as, uniquely as male and female, then we are destroying, then we are working against the creation mandate. But secondly, we work this creation mandate by creating a life-nurturing environment, by following God's laws, statutes, and principles. And then the third thing is by procreation, by being fruitful and multiplying. I put them in this specific order because it is specific. Everyone is either a male or a female. The end. Okay? God created them male and female. If you do not embrace and affirm the distinct, specific, and unique role as what you are, as what God created you, and also what God created the other individuals around you, you will not fulfill this creation mandate. Okay? This is the first step. Okay? It begins and it fails here. This is the foundation. Without this, you will not create a society, a civilization. Okay? You will not nurture life. You will not be fruitful and multiply. You will reject it. Now, I know.
You won't upkeep one either.
And upkeep might be the better word because, you know, as if you were born into a society that has these quote-unquote norms, you might fit in with a certain portion of those norms while you degenerate, while you become less and less
civil.
Less and less civil. So during your lifetime, you might still, you know, have children. But your children won't. Okay? There is a progression to this. Like a train engine that gains speed, it also takes some time for it to stop. Okay? It'll take it a long time to gain speed, and it takes it a long time to slow down. And civilization can be like that. Right? Frequently, I think that we see that. It took Rome like several hundred years to actually come to a grinding halt. Right? So you embrace the role of male and female as God created you and those that are around you. And then, secondly, you create a life-nurturing environment. Right now, my children are not having children, but they can still embrace their male or femaleness as God has created them, and they can also still create a nurturing environment, a life-nurturing environment. You can create a life-nurturing environment whether you're able to procreate or not. Procreation is the last on the list. Okay, because these other things have to be in play. Pirates are fruitful, but they don't create a nurturing environment. Okay?
They're fruitful? What do you mean?
They have kids.
Maybe.
Yeah, there's a... I'm trying to remember. I'm sitting here trying to remember who it was. There was a... it was like the Romans... I can't remember. They continued to attack. These one set of people continued to attack these other set of people. And any time that they would attack, they were definitely superior in their military and in their might, and they would always sack the city. And they'd take whatever they wanted. They'd pillage and they'd rape. And they'd leave. And next year they'd come back. And they do the same thing. And they do the same thing. They do the same thing. And eventually they lost. And they said, "We lost because we're fighting our own children." Okay? They weren't creating anything, but they were having children. That's what I'm getting at. Okay? There is a difference between having children, fruitfulness, and actually multiplying. And yes, I would also say that fruitfulness is not just having children, that it is more than that, okay? But it begins with having children. You have to create this life-nurturing environment in order to be fruitful, okay? But if you take seed and you just scatter it along the road as you run down the road, that seed will sprout alongside the road, but it will not be food for you, all right? Because you have not created an environment that is good for creating life. Right? So, this is not just about everyone going out and pre-sex and all that and having a bunch of kids. This really steps back to, first, embracing the role of male and female, and two, creating that life-nurturing environment. The life-nurturing environment is created by following God's laws, statutes, and principles. The end. If you step away from that, you're automatically... The train is losing momentum. Civilization is decreasing as you step away from it. May not be obvious at first, but it absolutely is. Okay. When I was a little kid, I used to take a string or one of those little chains, little bead, bunch of chains, and like to swirl it around. If you've ever played, it's like with the pull chain on a light switch, right? If on a fan, And if you get a long enough one, it's a lot of fun to play with. You can go home and do it. But if you spin it just right, you'll get it to do this little arc, one curve, and you can swing that one curve around. And if you spin it just right again, you can actually make two hoops, one this way and one this way. And if you spin it just right, you can get one, two, three. And if you're really good, you might get four or five. All right? When you get one, you just have to get a little bit of an idea. But you have to really have the finesse to get it to do multiple hoops. Okay? And civilization is like that. To actually have life, to be able to just survive, doesn't take much skill. But in order to provide for more and more and more people, it takes more skill. And you will see, the reason why we only have 9 billion people is because we're only at this skill level. And if we're not careful, we're going to blow everybody up and show really what skill level we're actually at in our generation. Okay? Because reality will come about. So that was that point there. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
You said creating a life-nurturing environment was possible without procreation. What can you give some examples?
The Garden of Eden was a life-nurturing environment apart
from... But God created that for them.
Yes, but he also told Adam to keep the garden.
Yeah.
So your job is to create this environment.
But
cultivate this environment. From there, and if he did his job well, when Eve came along, he would have had children, and he would have killed the serpent. He would have led Eve instead of whatever took place there, going along with her. All right, and so because there was a failure to at least understand the full breadth of what was taking place in the garden when the serpent showed up. The serpent showed it revealed the lack of ability for Adam to do what he was told to do. He wasn't there.
You do it in faith, then.
Absolutely. Whatsoever is not of faith is sin.
But what I'm saying is that you just have to believe that you're doing it without the. If there's no fruit yet, then you have to just walk in faith that by doing, like you said, God's laws, statutes, and principles,
right,
you will be part of a life-creating environment. And I say, yes, true. I'm just saying.
Yep. That is where I'm.
Because God is the one who decides about the results of your your fruit results.
Yep. Also, that creating that life-nurturing environment has to do with bitterness and resentment against not being able to get what you want one way or the other. That would become extremely destructive.
Resisting that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so actions come out of philosophy. Cambridge Dictionary says that philosophy is a particular set of beliefs, values, and principles. Basically, it's why you choose what you choose. That's philosophy. What's your philosophy of life? Why do you choose what you choose? Actions flow out of why you choose what you choose. What is your motivation? The actions flow out of your motivations. The reason I put this in here is because if everyone had the philosophy you do, right? So this is stepping back to, are you creating a life-nurturing environment? If everyone had the philosophy you do, would the creation mandate be helped or hindered? All right? So, say?
Depends on your philosophy.
Exactly. And so you should ask yourself.
This is a rhetorical question to yourself. If everybody was like me, what would happen to this? So it's a way to self-reflect.
I want to, what do they call those people?
Egyptians?
Double income, no kids. Dinks. Double income, no kids. Okay? I'm living the life.
They don't know what
this is. They don't know.
I'm not sure they know what.
Okay. So there are people, it is a trend. in this world, in this culture in which you live, where people will get married and intentionally not have children.
Specifically in wealthy cultures.
Yes.
Because not in other cultures does it work. Right. That's the point.
Yeah, and it won't in this one either.
Well, yeah, it doesn't. It appears like it is. But
the train's still moving.
Not very fast.
But this philosophy of it's all about me. I want to take all of my effort and enjoy my life my way. I don't want to be hindered, and I don't want my life to be about anybody else.
Except, I mean, you are in this situation. You're married.
But that's only because it's convenient. It gives me a double income, and we can pool our resources. But I'm telling you, if something changed...
You'd be gone, wouldn't you?
Another cute one over there. Because it's selfish. All about self, okay? Now, I'm not saying that that's absolute. Everyone is, you know, that debased. Because of God's grace, then they might not, okay? But they're creating a culture, they're creating an environment where they're encouraging others around them to live this same way, all right? So what's going to happen? What's going to happen to that man and that woman?
So dinks would be just one level up from sinks.
And what do sinks? What do explain?
Single income, because you're single. You refuse to get married or anything.
Yeah. Single. Oh, but they are one level up. I guess you. Yes.
Saying. At least they've committed to a relationship with another person.
Right.
They're not so like completely focused on themselves that they're not going to even.
And apparently they have some enough civilization that they can live in some relative peace, harmony together.
Yeah.
Cool.
Until they don't.
All right. But this rejection of children, they're going to live into the ripe old age of whenever they get old, and they're going to find out that they
have
not.
That would be a hink also.
And what would that be?
Homosexual.
There you go. Yes, that's right. Because
they're like basically the same thing. I was just thinking about
the differences there. I would actually put them.
They're kind of
the single individual. Because God says that it's an abomination.
Yeah, but the saints are still. They're acting. They're just not committed to their relationship. They're still, you know, for the majority.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you.
I was just thinking about the sinks and the dinks and the hinks.
So if everyone had this philosophy of these individuals, what happens in one generation?
That should be a hoink. Homosexual only one income. Sorry.
What happens in one generation?
There's no wife.
They're gone.
No kids. Everything is gone. It's over.
It's like the Bible says, you know, they build all this up for somebody else.
That's right. It absolutely is. A rejection of God is a rejection of life. Yeah. The wealth of the wicked is stored up for the righteous. Okay? So, if everyone had the philosophy you do, would the creation mandate be helped or hindered? And that question, if you looked in your life and you asked that question about different aspects of your life, it's a reasonable way to calibrate whether you're living in line with what God has said. Okay. If everybody stole like I did, if everybody committed adultery like I did, if everybody murdered like I did, if everybody coveted like I did, if everybody lied like I did, what happens?
You know, I'm convinced that if people would understand how much it's hurting them to be part of a culture of lying, how much nicer. In the sense of like how much less effort and energy would be required when you didn't have to protect yourself from other people lying.
Mm-hmm.
If they realized that, they would be like, oh, we all need to just stop lying to each other. Seriously.
They did this study.
All the effort and energy that you have to apply each and every day because other people will not be honest with you.
They do this in corporations. This little test. They'll put 10 people in a circle, and here's the rules. Everyone has to, you have two cards, you either put a one or a zero. Everybody, if everybody puts a one down, then everybody is increased, their points are given so many points, okay? Everybody gets 10 points. However, if one person puts a zero down and everybody else puts a one down, then you get everybody else's points, okay? So if everybody will put a one down, everybody gets 10 points. If one person doesn't put a one down, puts a zero down, that person who put the zero down will get everybody else's points. Nobody else gets any points. But if more than one person puts a zero down, nobody gets any points. Three possibilities. How do we win?
Everybody puts a one down.
Until someone gets greedy and says, well, I could get everybody's because we're all putting one down. Okay? And it's surprising how many times nobody ends up with any points in this
game.
It's
not surprising, actually.
Yes, okay. Yes. Because, to your point, if we knew how easy it would be, it'd be like everybody's telling the truth. That means that I can lie and get away with it. You take, think of the profit I'll make. I'll rake it in, man. Because everybody else is telling the truth. I'm the only one that's being the idiot. Right?
Which is why the game needs to be anybody that puts a zero down gets this bullet in their head.
Ejected from the game.
That's exactly what I said. Ejected from the game.
Yes.
Ejected from the, or ejected from the group.
And
right?
It doesn't matter if which you're is, the only which one
is,
or
which
if
is
you're
what
the,
a law. It's all the law that, is all about.
There's the law.
Eject from the group.
That's right.
Ejected from the group. Group.
Proper consequences. All right. So rebellion is any alteration. All right. So here's submission. Submission is working towards the creation mandate. Staying in line with God's laws, His statutes, and His principles. Rebellion is an alteration of those roles and the dynamics God has instituted. Well, I know that I'm a man, but it's convenient for me to not be manly. That would be rebellion. Well, I'm a woman, and I know I should, but it's convenient for me to do it this way. I think it should be done this way. That's rebellion. Okay? It's an alteration of the roles. It's an alteration of the dynamic that God has instituted. I don't care how much you think it will work better. I don't care how much you think it's dangerous to go along with what God has said. You're wrong. God's right. This is the proper way to do it. Speak about that a little bit more in the future, but rebellion is a homification of culture. Anytime there is a rebellion, what you are doing is you are taking the role of male and female and you're beginning to blend them. You're beginning to say there are no distinct roles. Everybody's the same. You are a homo.
Homogenized. Homogenization.
Yeah. Okay. You're pulling to one. You're not being distinct.
So we're right?
God created it. God created distinctions. And when we rebel against God, what is happening is we are saying that the sexes can be merged, meshed.
That's just one application of it, though. I mean, it's an important one. It's the one that's relative to the creation mandate. But that's just one application of the homogenization.
Okay.
I mean, right? I mean, because there's other... It's not the... I don't know if he's even... the fundamental, I guess, but it's...
But see, I see the
because you know what, there's different...
The sexes as the basis for civilization.
Do what now?
The distinction of the sexes, male and female,
right,
is the basis for civilization.
I was just thinking about the... There's also an homogenization within the all the other religions of the world. There's either homogenization that every God is just the same God and, you know, it's just everything's God, or there's homogenization that there is no God and everything is just the same thing. It's all just matter. I mean, and most of all the religions come out of that. Unless you have an aberration of the true religion, like Judaism and Islam are both aberrations of the true religion, of the true God, the Most High God. Everything else is a homogenization of the gods, or so is one extreme or the other extreme. So which would be, to me, that would be more the fundamental, because the homogenization of the sexes comes out of a rejection of the truth. It's maybe a fundamental, one of the fundamental changes that homogenization and not being in the true faith creates. But wouldn't it be more fundamental to say that there is not just one God? There's a homogenization of God, so to speak.
I didn't track with that last statement there.
Well, I just think that. Let me say it again.
Please. Or restate.
Homogenization of the sexes would be an aberration from the true faith, from the truth. But the more fundamental truth within the truth is that there is truth, and the truth comes from God. So homogenization of God, one way or the other, seems to me a little bit more fundamental
I can
rebellion.
Yeah.
And then maybe the next level up could, you know, I mean, I'm saying it's pretty low, it's pretty foundational. But
yeah.
I mean, it's a mere result of homogenization of God.
Yeah.
Of not believing in the truth.
What would you think about a spiritual and a physical? The spiritual foundation and a physical or a material foundation? Maybe materials to
well, you're rejecting a fun, you know, to homogenize the sexes is to reject the fundamental truth that is apparent in nature.
At the very basis.
I mean, nature's law people can go to nature's law.
Yeah.
You know, there's some natural law people versus theonomic people, kind of, you know, the two differences there. Even that, I mean, it's a fundamental, it's like, either way you go, the differentiation is, if you want to go to the scriptures to forget it, great. If you want to go to nature and look at it, there's a differentiation. You can get it either place. That's how fundamental it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to accept either one of those if you don't believe that there's in the Creator, God.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That's all I'm saying. So I'm tweaking like how maybe there is one more under lower level fundamental than that, but it's pretty low fundamental.
Particularly like you mentioned in our conversation here, it fits pretty snug at the bottom.
Snuggy at the bottom.
Yeah, rebellion is a homification of the culture, and rebellion is anything that rejects the natural process of having children or bringing up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
What can you say?
Homification, is that the homogenization or is that the?
It's another way to say the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Taking differentiation and just saying there's no differentiation.
No distinction.
I don't think they know, like, Earth might not know homogenization, but they would know milk.
Well, that's what, homogenization means you're taking, like, you know, milk generally separates into cream and milk. If you take it and shake it up real good, it becomes homogenized. I mean, it becomes one liquid that you can't tell the differentiation between the cream and the milk. That's what homogenization is. That's the most classic or most relevant social. Everybody knows. Most everybody is familiar with homogenized milk. It says it around there on the bottle. If you go to the store, you're going to get it, homogenized milk. And they took it and they spun it so fast that they broke up the little fat that makes the cream. Broke it up so small that it'll stay in solution, and you don't even know they're there.
It's just like the other ones.
What?
Say it again.
The fat molecules of the cream becomes just like the fat molecules of the rest of it. No, that's what you, right? They're all equal. They're all exactly the same.
Because well, the final product looks like one thing, but it's really a blend of two, but they've been blended so much you can't tell the difference. Like if you take milk straight from the cow and let it sit there, the cream's going to rise to the top. And it's going to be similar but distinctly different from the milk part, from the liquid part.
It's designed to be together. But they are two distinct parts.
They're no longer going to rot. They no longer rot.
Yeah.
Once you homogenize it, it can sit forever, and it will. I mean, I don't know about forever, but it can sit as long as it'll stay good. It never separates back out again because it's been blended so much that that basically the two have become one product. Whereas before, they're two different products.
Yeah,
they arrive together from the same source, but they're two separate products.
So you were talking about, I thought I was tracking right here, blending, correct me if I'm wrong, blending false gods with God to make them where you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, I'm just pointing out that every false religion that's not an aberration of the true of, like, I think there's some, like Judaism and Islam, are aberrations of the true religion.
The aberration, the homification, would be that they are saying that creation and the creator
are the same.
Are one. That's the homogenization.
Yeah.
You can't. They will not see the distinction between the sun and the creator of the sun. They will not see the distinction between the Saturn and the creation of Saturn, the creator of Saturn.
They'll either not see it in the sense, and they see it two different possible ways that they see the blend. They either see the blend as everything is God,
mm-hmm.
or that nothing is God, that there is no God, and everything is matter. Those are the two extremes of the blend. And that, so they're both an homogenization of the creator and the created. I like that a lot. But they tend to see the result in different ways. So they look different in terms of like the two different religions. So you got scientism, naturalism as the material only, and you got like
Hinduism
and transcendentalism as the everything is God side of it. Confucianism, basically, it's that kind of stuff. But those are both homogenizations of the truth. Which is there's a creator and there's a creature, and they're distinct. That's why I consider that a little bit like the bottom foundational rebellion. So what you're saying is rebellion takes what is supposed to be separate and smashes it together so that it's no longer recognizable as its separate unities. And it's fundamentally a rejection of the truth.
All right. So from rebellion, rebellion is anything that rejects that natural process of having children or bringing up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Anything that rejects it or disrupts it.
That'd be one form of rebellion.
It would be a form of rebellion.
Right.
Yes. This is not the only way that you can rebel. However, any rebellion that you have, I do think will disrupt the ability to bring up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and so it is. It would disrupt this process.
Well, yeah, generally rebellion is across the board. It's not just one section. So,
yeah.
And even if, like the Dinks, even though they're supposedly committed couples or whatever, they're really not committed couples in the sense of. I mean. That they're rejecting some truth, so that's going to affect their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be what it could be if they were embracing the whole truth. Even though it looks like they're not rejecting that, it may look that way, it's still going to be affected by their other rebellion.
It will. So what is the basis for civilization? Men are to provide an environment conducive to life in which to nurture his wife and children. I could have said a man is to provide an environment conducive to life in which to nurture his wife and children. When a man is in submission to the Lord, his strength will create an environment that is good for his wife and her children. You like that?
I like that.
Okay, good. Women.
I like that.
Are to use the environment. So a woman is to use that environment, which was provided by the man, to bring forth and nurture life to give back to her husband. When a woman is in submission to the Lord, she will use her power to create life and to give life back to her husband. Children trained under a sober, disciplined father become powerful children. Children without a sober and disciplined father are selfish and destructive, both to themselves and civilization. So we have this cycle, right? So men create an environment.
It's either a spiral up or a spiral down.
Yes. Yeah. No, really. Yeah. Men create the environment. Women produce the children. Women give the children to the men to create the next generation. The next generation under this sober and disciplined father create powerful children who will then continue to grow civilization. Otherwise, they become selfish and destructive, and the civilization becomes lessened, weakened, destroyed. All right? So in general, women nurture physically, men nurture spiritually. Mothers keep the children healthy, fathers make them productive life givers. As I read Proverbs, there is overlap, some in this, but by far, the instruction is from the fathers to the children. If fathers are not instructing their children, children will not become powerful. We were reading yesterday in Proverbs, and the verse says, the success of the success of a fool destroys them. That's not how it says it, but that's the idea. The prosperity of fools shall destroy them. That's how the King James says it. Prospering in your foolishness will destroy you. All right? So, you ever do something stupid and lose a thumbnail? If you didn't lose a thumbnail and you got confident in doing that, what would eventually happen?
Lose a thumb.
You'd lose your thumb. Okay? You're sitting there hammering, and you're hammering incorrectly. Right? And because you kind of did not fully commit to it as fully as you could, you only took the nail off. It was bad. But thanks be to God, you failed. The foolishness did not prosper, and you lost your thumbnail. If you did not fail, if God said, you're going to succeed in your foolishness, you will prosper in your foolishness, you'll put some weight behind it. You'll put more weight behind it, and you'll chop your thumb off. You'll chop your head off. You will destroy yourself. The prosperity of foolishness, when the fool prospers, he doubles down, and it won't just be a small hurt. It becomes more destructive.
For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of the fools shall destroy them.
Yeah, turning away from wisdom will destroy the simple, and because the fool prospers, it will destroy him. You're going to say something.
Well, I was just thought that's what we got. I mean, that's what's going on. That's what generally happens with civilizations, that they prosper, they get high and mighty in themselves, and turn away from the one who gave them the prosperity to start with. That's what happens in Western cultures. What's happening?
So Romans 13:8-10 says, owe no one anything except to love one another, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment summed up in one word, in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. And that statement, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law, is what is civilization. If you're not hurting your neighbor, if you're doing good by your neighbor, you're creating civilization.
And doing good by your neighbor should be defined. Doing good by your neighbor is simply you're doing right before the Lord.
It says, so love one another, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. The commandments, don't commit adultery, don't murder, don't steal, don't covet, and any other commandment is summed up in this. Love your neighbor. Loving your neighbor is doing good.
Yeah, but there's a very misguided idea of what loving your neighbor is out there.
And so we speak the truth.
Right.
We say, this is love. The commandments define what love is. It's not a rejection of the commandments. It is an embracing of those commandments. I mean, this is Mark. This is the words of Jesus. For all those people who don't care what Paul says, this is what Jesus said. Okay, shut up and actually obey what God has said. You're only looking for a way out. Okay? That's rebellion. It is not life-giving. It will destroy civilization. Ephesians chapter 5, 22 and following says, wives, submit to your husband as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. This is the delineation of the sexes. Okay? This is how this works. Now we're going to see more scripture that delineates the sexes. Okay? But a rejection of this delineation, of this line, is a rebellion against God and is a culture of death. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And what you see here is what I have right up here. Men provide an environment, women use that environment, children are trained under that environment. Okay? This is civilization. We see this repeated in Colossians chapter 3. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. By the way, this is word for word from the scriptures. Okay, if you open it up, this is what it says. I haven't changed anything. All I've done is put it into point by point by point as it's written. All right? Titus chapter 2. But as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, in love, and in steadfastness. Older women, likewise, are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good and so train the young women. The young women, too, love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. Likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled. Again, 1 Peter. Do you see a trend? Because they're written all like this. 1 Peter. Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. Without a word. By the conduct of their wives. When they see your respectful and pure conduct. Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair, putting on of gold jewelry, or the clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you are her children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening. Pause here, because to put yourself into this place that God has commanded can be frightening. But God says, do not fear. Do not fear. Fear is not, there is no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. Right? There is no fear when you are truly loving God. It casts out that fear, and you can walk in faith. God understands and says, yes, do not fear anything that is frightening. Hope in the Lord. It is God to whom you are subjecting yourself. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. When we rebel against the roles that God has created, we're destroying civilization and we are destroying ourselves. This right here that I have read is the delineation of the sexes. If you mention the word submission, you find out what people believe. It is a most abhorred word in our culture, and we are destroying ourselves.
Yet we submit to all kind of stuff every day that the culture places on us. We in general, like, not we necessarily here, but we as a culture submit to this ungodly requirements.
I had this, I don't know how I want to say it, but this thought came to me about the Garden of Eden and Adam in the garden. He may have told Eve, that's not good. That's not good to eat that. But she said, but look, this will be good for the family. And he's like, all right, Eve, whatever you want. When God gave the, when he spoke to the serpent, spoke to Adam and Eve, the punishment that he gave them was a blessing. It was speaking to their weaknesses. Women hold a power over men. Men want to please the woman. They do not want to lose the woman. God brought the woman to the man and said, here, this is a blessing for you. And men say, yes, I am blessed. Even though they might be cursed by the woman that God has given to them. Proverbs says it is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a contentious and an angry woman. But the man not willing to speak the truth, as we see here, love your wife as Christ loved the church, washing her with the water of the word, so that he might present her to himself in splendor. Husbands are to love their wives in the same way that Christ did this for the church. He's to love his wife as he loves himself. He is supposed to nourish and cherish her as Christ does the church. If Adam had truly nourished and cherished his wife, he would not have let her associate with that wicked serpent. Wouldn't have happened. But it would have taken some intestinal fortitude for him to step up and do what God had said. It was something that had never been done. Like, it was outside the realm of what he had seen. But it needed to be done. She probably would not have thought well of it. Her constitution would not have liked seeing the blood of this serpent on the ground. But it needed to happen. This is what creates the culture of life. When men step up and play the man, and do what God has said, and not give in to the power of the woman. But the woman, similarly, should not use her power to sway the man from him leading. That's why I emphasize that thing of the unbelieving wife, the unbelieving spouse is the Be subject to your own husbands. Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of the wife, when they see your respectful and pure conduct. The true power in a man is when he steps up and he leads. The true power in a woman is when she is in subjection, respectful, with a pure conduct before God. And in this we create life. We create children that will create life. But if men do not stand up for what is right, if they go along with the desires of the woman, of their woman, then they will not create a stable home. It will bring bad things into the home. On the other side, if the woman insists on having her way, it will create a rebellious and insecure children. Breed insecure children that will not cultivate society. Ultimately, it's the grace of God that keeps civilization ticking. Amen, amen. Because none of us do this perfectly. It is just that we need to come back to what God has said and say, yeah, this is what God has called me to as a man. Yes, this is what God has called me to as a woman. And by God's grace, may I so live. So, coming back to that upkeep. We do it to ourselves. The upkeep is me to upkeep myself. Am I playing the man? Am I in submission to what God has said, no matter what the fallout is, no matter the consequences? I think I'm done.
I didn't have that section.
Yeah, it came about this morning.
Yeah, but you know, Ben, we're not under the creation mandate anymore. We're under the Great Commission, right?
You want me to talk about that too?
No, because it's 1 o'clock.
You want to speak to that?
The simple fact is that the Great Commission is just a reinstatement of the creation mandate, given different terms.
You know what nations are made up of?
They are. You're going to disciple. That's what this is talking about. It's talking about discipling your family, whether you're the husband or the wife, or whether you're the mother or the father. Discipling your family.
Nations are made up of families. Families are made up of men and women. Nations rise or fall back to this civilization